So airplane mode is always a always solves it.
Thank you. Should I press it or should I? Okay. All right, guys. So kind of excited about this year because I've never given it before. Okay, I just want to warn you, the last three sources are Earth Cook. So we're not going to get there right away. We're going to get there about 20, 25 minutes in. Okay, so if you came just for the Rough Cook, you have to hang out a little bit. Okay, so here is a Gemara in Chagiga that is quite interesting that I actually encountered because of Rough Cook. Because I was learning Orot with Avi Linzer, and this Gemara came up. And then I did some more research and discovered there's a lot of interesting stuff there. Okay, so the Gemara in Chagiga, now you might know Chagiga has a lot of Agadata, not surprisingly. So here we're going to see a good Agada. Liotzei Luba Ein Shalom. So there's a Pasuk Tanakh about somebody who goes back and forth and somehow doesn't find peace. Who is this person? And what kind of going out are they doing? Amarav, Kibin Shiyotze Adam Midvar Halacha Lidvar Mikra. Someone who was learning Halacha and they go back to the Psukim. Shuv Ein Lo Shalom. He lacks Shalom. Okay, we'll see what this means in a minute. Vishmul Amar Zeh Purish Mitalmud L'Mishnah. Now notice we seem to keep going from something more complex and more along the path to something earlier in the game. So the first guy went from Halacha to back to Psukim, and the second fellow goes from Gemara back to Mishnah. Okay, and somehow they both lack Shalom. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Mitalmud L'Talmud. Even someone who goes from, and this is a little bit unclear, what do you guys think it might mean? Mitalmud L'Talmud? Okay, interesting. So maybe someone who goes from Yushalmi Bavli or Bavli Yushalmi. So we'll have to see which way it is and why would that also lack Shalom. Okay, so let's try to figure out, guys, why do these three people lack Shalom? Guys, are there enough sheets? You guys need more? We have enough?
Yeah.
Do you need more on that side?
Wow.
Here. David Benter, on tape? Okay, guys. So we read the first Gemara, and now we're going to see Rashi on it. If you just came in, you'll be able to catch up right away. So the first thing is, according to Rav, someone who goes from Halacha to Pesukim lacks Shalom. Why is that? Rashi, Sheyotzei Adam Midvar Halacha Dvar Mikra, Yashuv Ein Lo Shalom, She'ein Hora Midvar HaMikra. What's Hora, guys? Good. So it's often used to be Psak. So this Gemara seems to be about getting a clear Halachic guidance. So what's the problem, of course? She'amishnah Mefresh Etztimah HaTorah. Okay, what does that mean, guys? We've all heard this argument before. Ein hora midvar mikra. As much as you're a Tanakh lover, what's hard to do? It's hard to treat the Tanakh like the Shulchan Aruch. Like, it's hard to read Tanakh and say, oh, now I know exactly how to practice halacha. Right? If it says, don't do malacha on Shabbos, that doesn't really tell you what is a malacha, how is it defined, what are the categories. So again, apparently in this Gemara, Shalom is about having a halacha conclusion. There is something satisfying about knowing what to do. So if I go from halacha to psukim, I lack that. Okay, what about the second one, guys? Let's see if that fits in also. Mitam of the Mishnah. Im shimesh et hachachamim shein medak in liten tam mishnayo. What's the big advantage of Gemara? You get the reasons for Mishnah. Lahavin ha-mishnah ha-sotra du'etzeh. And then you can also deal with contradictory mishnayo. V'lun so tam liftor v'lechova lisa le'eter. Right, so what's he getting at here? So notice, it's very similar, right? I'm going to skip down just two lines. What's the beginning line? She'ein hora nechona bedvar mishnah. What else can I do, guys? I can't really, just like I can't really treat Tanakh like a Shulchan Aruch, I can't really treat Mishnah. Again, we all know Mishnah is very concise and brief. It doesn't get into the arguments. And the claim would be, if I really want to work out the halacha, I have to learn Gemara. So the first two seem very similar, right? What were the first two categories? It's Shalom here is about knowing the halachic conclusion. If I go from halachic book to psukim, I don't get it. If I go from Gemara to Mishnah, I'm also giving up on halacha. I'll just give you one example, guys, where I think it's crucial to know the reason for the halacha, because I think if you don't know the reason, you often make bad comparisons. This is my go-to example. Like, let's say I'm trying to figure out what status ritual candles have in halacha. So I look at Hanukkah, and I discover, what's the din with reading by Hanukkah candles? I'm not supposed to, right? What do we say? So let's say I have no idea what the rationale is. So what do I derive? I derive that ritual mitzvah candles in Judaism are asur bahana. You can't get benefit from them. Then I go to somebody's house Friday night, and I want to light Shabbos candles. So if I make my bad analogy, what do I say? Well, you can't get benefit from Hanukkah candles. You're not supposed to get benefit from Shabbos candles. But if I actually knew the rationale, what would I say? Shabbos candles are a fulfillment among other things, of Shalom Bayit and Oneg Shabbat. So they are actually meant to be enjoyed. In fact, if you don't enjoy them, it's problematic, right? That's why we tend to say, light them where you're eating dinner, because you're supposed to enjoy the Shabbos candles. So it's again like you can't, if you treat halacha as a brute fact, you'll often make a bad analogy or a bad comparison. Okay, so what do we have so far? The first two categories are about not knowing the halacha. Now what about Talmud l'Talmud? What was that about the third category? So look at the last two lines in here. I think Eli Jarish was you. Rashi goes with you. I feel me Talmud l'Talmud. Me Talmud l'Yushalmi l'Talmud Bavli. Now why is that a problem? Why does that mess you up? Why does that mess up your shalom if you go from the Yerushalmi to the Bavli? So look what it says here. Shehu Amok. What's Rashi getting at, guys? So which one is more complex and more intricate? The Bavli. The Bavli is deeper. Right, Yerushalmi is a bit more straightforward. Now let me clarify one thing, guys. Tim said, why JJ might have given a different answer. It's more difficult to read Yerushalmi sometimes, but that's really because the Bavli was better edited than the Yerushalmi. But that's not the same question as which has more intricate argumentation, right? The Bavli has more intricate argumentation. It just does better edited, so it might be easier to read. Okay, so now he says, Shu Amok, Kidamrinan, B'Sanhedrin, Zagmar Sanhedrin, B'Mechshachim Hoshivani Kimitei Olam, somehow about being placed in darkness, right? Mechshachim from the word Choshech, Zu HaTalmud Shel Bavel. So what does the Gemara in Sanhedrin relate the Bavli to? Darkness. So I guess, and according to the simple Pshat, what's he saying? What's the darkness of the Bavli? That it's complex, it's deep, it's difficult. So again, if I go from Yerushalmi to Bavli, I lose a sense of shalom. So again, guys, what's the first trend? According to Rashi, what are the three lackings of shalom? If I go from halacha to psukim, I won't know the halacha. If I go from Gemara to Mishnah, I won't know the halacha. I'm not sure the third part, I'm a little confused. Is it about not knowing the halacha, or just that like it's more complex? I go from Yerushalmi to Bavli, and all of a sudden, I experience the darkness of difficulty. Yeah, Rafi. Look, I think for a lot of people, you want clear practical guidelines. You want clear answers, and the sense of uncertainty about what to do is often a difficulty. Okay, so I think in that sense, that's why it's lack of shalom. Yeah?
When he says going from Talmud to Talmud and not actually being able to understand halacha, which way is he talking about?
Ah, so how does Rashi say, guys? Which way is the problematic way? Yerushalmi to Bavli. And why does that lead to a lack of shalom? Because the Bavli is just so intricate, maybe you feel like I can't get the reasoning. Right, think about a day when like you struggle to understand Pshat and Baba Kama. Okay, so that's what this is about. Yeah.
Like just kind of following the reasoning from the other two, wouldn't you say that the third one is like, it's less deep and it's actually easier to get?
So the truth is, it is interesting. I'm not sure, according to Rashi, if we should view all three as being the same kind of lack of shalom. I'm not sure which way to go with this, guys. Is it all three the same or is it different? The first two are lack of shalom because you can't get a lucky conclusion. Mm-hmm. And the third is lack of shalom because you can't understand the pshat, right? I agree. David, you're right. There is some tempting to say that in Rashi, all three are the same thing. I'm just not sure if that's the smoothest reading logically. Okay? Everybody good? Okay, let's go to Tosfos. So Tosfos first quotes Rashi, but let's go to where he changes gears. Let's try a little trick here, guys. We'll see who knows key Tosfos words. Okay, if you wanted to skip to where Tosfos shifts gears, what's the key word that shifts gears here? Okay, that's true, but even before that. Okay, guys, don't guess. Read the Tosos.
Like half
the. Okay, but where do you see kind of a shifting? All right, we read the whole Tosos. Here we go, guys. Afil mishas l'shas. Mishas l'yushalmi l'shas bavli. Kedepirish Rashi. V'chein b'yushalmi b'chshachanim o'shvani kimte olam elu shas bavli. V'chein Rav Kahana David Tzayim, he would fast to l'shtakach minei shas bavli. He wanted to forget the Babylonian Gemara. He wanted to just think like a Yerushalmi. Umiyu! What's umiyu? However, that's the transition. However, afilu ibcha yesh lomar. What's he getting at now? Meaning it could be also be Yerushalmi. Sorry, Bavli to Yerushalmi. Why is that? Vachi peyusho, shepirish mizeh, vadayin lo hevin bezeh. Shemitokach lo yaleb yado halacha bura. So Tosa does bring halacha. Okay, why does Tosa think it could go both ways? Because according to Tosa, he shifts the educational point here. What's the point according to Tosa? It's not about different methodologies. It's just that you leave one before. What did you just say?
before actually getting clear a lot of
them. Exactly! There's a certain kind of person in the Warriors where it's like, you know, you lose patience very early in the game. So you start learning your Shami, you don't fully get it, that's enough, let's go to the Bavli. You start learning Bavli, you don't fully get every nuance, but you're back into your Shami. Right? So you never really come to a satisfying conclusion. Right? So according, and notice it's interesting, according to Rashi, it's specifically in one direction, going from the Yushalmi to the Bavli adds a lack of clarity. For Tosfos, it could go either way. The point is, it's a different educational point according to Tosfos. According to Tosfos, it's just that finish what you're doing before you move on. Don't be so quick to jump around all the time. And notice Tosfos again brings up, you won't get a clear halacha. Okay, so those of you who came late, we're going to get to Rav Kook halfway through this year, so hang in there. Yeah?
It seems like there's this thinking of, like, you basically go through a select text in the Jewish canon, and then you go to the next one, and then the next one, and the next one. But I feel like no one really does that today. Like, everyone's kind of like, you go to a little Mishnah, like, this age, this one. Like, what, like, how do they actually learn back then?
Look, that's a good question, but I'm going to duck it for now. Yeah?
I guess my first question kind of goes into that, so I'm the answer, but when they were writing the Talmud, did they know that Talmud Yerushalayim is happening again?
So the truth is, I don't know if you noticed this, I should have emphasized this a little bit more. I think the Gemara might not be written yet, but when they say Talmud, what do they mean? A deeper approach to learning Mishnah. I think if you look at the Rashi, I should have emphasized that more. Okay, so maybe I'll even go back. Can we go back for a second to the Rashi? It's a good point, Jacob. I should have emphasized this. Me Talmud l'Mishnah. Im shimeshet chachamim. You're like a student to the sages. Shein medat in liten tam Mishnayot. What do? They give the reasons for Mishnayot. Lavina Mishnah Sotur Zuetzu, and they also explain contradictions. Lotso Tam Luftar Lechova, they explain why you're Pater Chayev, Lisleter. Shah Mishnah Zu Karui Talmud. What's Kari Talmud? Everything I just said is cool Talmud, meaning it could be at that generation there was no such thing as like Baba Kama, etc. But the point is, it's not just taking Mishnah at face value, it is this more deep understanding of Mishnayot, which ultimately got compiled in the Gemara. Okay, so Talmud here means this deeper analysis of Mishnah. Yeah?
Meaning, I suppose, was it the suggestion that Afilu Mishas Hashas is, you know, when he says about Bavli Yerushalmi and Yerushalmi and Bavli is being finished something before you go to the other, that's so too also to the second and the first?
Interesting.
If you say yes, then you know, I don't understand, like,
right. Because the last line of Tosfos about Halacha Brura, I'm tempted to say that the first two cases, Tosfos will just endorse Rashi, but then Tosfos will shift for the third case. Because again, because that's why, then they deal with David's problem, then all three are about lack of halacha clarity. I have a lack of halacha clarity if I try to get it out of Psukim, I have a lack of halacha clarity if I try to get it out of Mishnah, and if I keep shifting from Bavli to Yerushalmi, I'll have a lack of clarity also.
So what does Rashi think?
One and two, or I thought the problem was more that according to Rashi, three might be totally different than one and two.
No, I would argue that each one should have a difference, because otherwise...
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, you're saying instead, it's interesting, because when you have three examples, you always tend to go one of two directions. Either it's all cut from the same cloth, or it's three different categories. So you want to read Rashi more than it's three different categories. It's a clever point, Charlie. It doesn't seem like Rashi's saying that, though.
I don't know if it's reading as Rashi versus, I don't know why the Gemara would need to bring...
No, because there might be two examples of the same principle.
No.
Right? Meaning it might be important to point out, you can't really get halacha from Sukkim. Oh, but I can get it from Mishnah. No, actually, you can't really get it from Mishnah either.
I need Shmuel to tell me where I can't get.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
I think on that, though, if you look at the three examples, we're almost getting like more and more specific in that the things that we're comparing are getting
more
similar. And we're starting... You shouldn't go from learning halacha to then learning psukim. And then we say, even within the realm of, like, Torah Shabbat Peh, you shouldn't go from Mishnayos on their pshat to Mishnayos at a deeper level. The other way around. And then finally, we say, even within that deeper level of understanding of learning, you shouldn't go from the, like, train of thought of Bavli to that of Yerushalmi.
Okay, good, very good.
But, and therefore, what?
No, you would say that the distinctions get... I think Gary's arguing the distinctions get more...
So what? Why shouldn't you? According to that reading, because I don't think Rashi reads it exactly like that. If your argument is you shouldn't go from a deeper source of...
I think his point is the distinctions get more subtle as you go along.
No, agreed. But
right. Means there's a more subtle difference between Bava Yerushalmi than Gemara Mishnah. Right.
Why are the Rebbeim telling you don't go from a deeper source of learning to a more shallow?
No, I think the reason Rashi says still holds and the Machlokes is the extent of that. Like the extent to which they're willing to take that point. Because you could argue, like, even if you hold, who's the first one, Rav, that you can't go from...
Let me have a Talmud debate, it's great.
From Halacha to Mikro.
We should announce everybody. This is Aaron Levin and Charlie...
it's being recorded.
Yeah, go ahead.
We'll talk about it now.
All right.
Lost.
Okay, great, Josh.
I feel like the distinction doesn't even have to be that complicated between the first one and the second one. I think that you can very easily say that the difference between the first one, between Pesukim and Mishnah, is it seems like Rashi's saying that, like, you're just not even able from Pesukim to get shot what the halacha is. But when it comes to the difference between Mishnah and Gemara, through the Mishnah, you're able to get shot with the halacha.
Good.
But it's the reasons of it that you're not.
It's a little bit similar to Aaron's point, right? It's getting more subtle, the distinction each time, no?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily that it's getting more subtle as much as just it's a fundamentally different kind of understanding that you would get from one.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Very good. Okay, great. So now, guys, before we get to the Rav Kook section, we're going to do Rav Kook's Rebbe, actually. So this is kind of interesting. Okay, Rav Kook did not spend so much time in yeshiva, but he did spend a year and a half in it. Which yeshiva was in?
Volozhin.
Oh, you guys know your stuff, Volozhin. And Volozhin had two Rashi yeshiva. One of the yeshiva was the Netziv, from the Tel Tzvi Lublin, and Rav Kook was very much enamored of the Netziv. So we're actually going to Netziv first, and then we'll get to Rav Kook. We're going to count this as Rav Kook, even though we're looking at the Netziv. Okay, so the Netziv is an amazing idea on the second Luchot. Guys, who knows what was the difference between the second Luchot and the first Luchot? Just practical. Yeah, practical.
The first one was written by Hashem.
Okay, good. How does the second Luchot get introduced? Psalacha. Meaning, what's Moshe supposed to do?
Yes,
you engrave them. So it seems to be a sense that physically God makes the first Luchot, and Moshe Rabbeinu makes the second Luchot. But here's the thing that's really interesting. Here we go. Yesh lahaktim ha-shakatav ha-rab Abba ben Ezra b'shem ha-gon de Luchot shniot mechubadim min ha-rishonot. What did the Gon say? The second Luchot are more honorable than the first. The Harav Ibn Ezra Katapalzeh, the Eila Kedivrei Chalom, right? They didn't mince words in the Middle Ages. What does he say? That's like a dream, but not like Martin Luther King, I have a dream. What kind of dream? It is just vacuous. Lo Malam, Lo Meridim. But now the Netziv is going to defend him. Of Divrei Gaon, Lav Divrei Reikein. But the words of the Gaon are not?
Empty.
Now, why did Ibn Ezra react so strongly? Because look at Ibn Ezra's gut reaction. Why not? Well, if God made the first one and Moshe made the second one, the first ones are more mechubad than the second.
Right? The second one was made after the initial sin.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so you're saying that might defend the Gaon?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So, let's see. So, first of all, I just find the whole conversation fascinating, because until I read this, it never occurred to me to even ask the question, like, which Luchot were better than the other. But apparently, they decided to have this debate. So, the Gaon says it's the second Luchot. The Ibn Ezra says, that's absurd. God made the first Luchot. Okay, here we go. Vakavana because this has the Netziv some 800 years, 700 years later gonna defend the goat. To Beluchot Arishonot, Lo Nitan Koach HaChidush. What does he want to claim? That humanity, the sages, to those that learn Torah, were not given the ability to innovate. Ella Mashakibel Moshe Yuka Mikod Velochum Kyotzibizet. Of a lol chadesh dvaralacha, Aideh Yudgimumidot. This is quite fascinating. We know that in the Gemara, the rabbis seem to have tremendous creative power, right? They could say a Kal Vachomer, they could say a Hekesh, and alter the history of Halacha. So the claim is that only kicked into play with the second Luchot. That wasn't true yet with the first Luchot. Now before, let me just see if I have time to read this inside. Really, the whole thing's worth reading inside, but maybe because it's late at night, I'm not going to do it.
Not true, meaning like, theoretically? Right.
But let's say whatever Torah Moshe got when he got the first Luchot did not involve this more creative endeavor. Yeah.
I'm just curious, is Ibn Ezra like contradictory to panentheist conception of God?
This Ibn Ezra or Ibn Ezra in general?
No, this Ibn Ezra.
What? Just curious why?
Because he says like God created them, but like, or I guess then it would be because like theoretically God created both of those cultures.
You know what? I'll let the panentheist handle it. I'm not a panentheist, so you have to ask them. Okay? Okay. See, guys, you're teaching the right thing. Even if you can share, like, on Rav Kook's educational theory, somehow, actually, that's not so crazy, the panentheism comes up. Okay. Yeah.
Would that be true about Shabbat, or you said something different?
Say it again? No, so I think it's not that there was no Torah Shabbat Peh, but Torah Shabbat Peh was much more limited. Right? I didn't have the more creative aspects of Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, before we get to why this would be, guys, what would work out very nice symbolically, according to this? That what would work out very nice symbolically? That's why in the second Luchot, so notice, Moshe, isn't that interesting? Moshe engraves them, takes a much deeper meaning. That's because there's much more human involvement in the second Luchot. Okay, now why was there this shift? So don't. So let's take a look at right after the ellipsis. Okay, like seventh line. The kozaya egel sibalaza. The egel was the cause. Shenikzu yom pakti v'kardi umishumachi yigia b'gzeim raglim galut upizur baratzot. What's the claim? It's almost like chayda egel. It's a paradigm. What's going to happen in Jewish history? We're going to sin. What's going to happen as a result of sin? We're going to go into galut. And then what's the claim? Now this really needs to be worked out, guys, in its own chair, that this more creative human endeavor gets us through the galut. Okay, that's the way we survived, and I think there's a lot of truth, but if you think about it, let's say you lose the land of Israel, you lose the Beit HaMikdash, so to a great degree, like, the focus shifts, like, what keeps Judaism going? Right, the vibrant Beit Midrash, as it were. And that might be a product of this more creative human involvement in the Torah Shabbat. I haven't got this theory. So Nitziv has this great theory. Again, that's the shift from the first Luchot to the second Luchot. Why do we make the shift? Because Cheder Egel indicates the pattern that's going to introduce Galut. This gets us to Galut. Guys, one more thing. I just want to finish the piece, then I'll take comments. It's really a fascinating piece. So skip down now to the Kol Zed Divrei Gaon. Okay, he's going to, you see that again after the next ellipsis? Ready? The Kol Zed Divrei Gaon. Now, he does something very clever in terms of language. To Bezeh Prat, regarding this, Prat, this detail, Hayolukot Shniot Mechubadim Nerishonot, Shafal Gav Tektushat Harishonim, Haytan Elamim. This, I think, is very clever. He says, wait, maybe the Gaon used the word Mechubad on purpose. Because maybe there's a difference, you know, maybe if I do a comparison, the first Luchot and the second Luchot, it depends which category I'm in, which game am I playing. What's the claim? If I did a Kedusha comparison, who would win? The first, because one could easily argue, Kedusha is a function of divinity. So that, for sure, if God makes something, that has more Kedusha than if a human being makes something. But Mechubad is not about divinity. Mechubad might be about its impact, right? The way it helps us. So at that point, what could you argue? The first Luchot are more Kadosh, but the second Luchot are more Mechubad. That's not a contradiction. Everything has to be analyzed in its category. Okay, great. So now, one last thing, guys. So skip down to... Then he says the same is true about... Skip to the next page. He said... Really, the whole thing's written, guys. If you're bored one day, just read this Nitziv. He says, that's also between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is more Kadosh, but the Bavli is more Mechubad. Okay, and then look what he says on the last line here. Talmud Bavli... Sorry, the first line of the second page. Talmud Bavli Mechubad Me Yerushalmi. Guys, remember that Tosfos and Rashi quoted? That what's the Bavli? Because it's so complex, it is dark. Look what he does with it. How does he want to read it? This is not a detriment of the Bavli. Ela kocho hanifla lahayir halacha afilu b'mechshachim. That's really clever. What's the darkness of the Bavli? It's the element that illuminated the darkness of Chutzlaritz. Because in the Nitziv's theory, it's the Bavli kind of learning that got us through the exile. Okay, now comments. That's really an amazing Nitziv. Charlie?
In general, are the Yiddish midos used to create chumras or kulas?
Both directions. No reason to think one or the other. Okay.
I would suggest that perhaps if you view the Chayda Egel as the Siba, like he suggests, but you think about the Gullus side, then maybe what you see is Bnei Israel sinned, and so now the Rabbanim have power to use Yud Gimel Midos, but I wasn't sure whether or not I would then say,
look,
not to make it.
Okay, so Charlie, I have to say, it's not for us now, but there are some interesting sources about whether the Torah Shabbat Peh is somehow like softer or harsher than Torah Shabbat Chtav. Okay. There are some interesting Makar like that, but not for us right this second. Shalom. Okay, so, well, don't forget the Luchot. What happens to Luchot we show note? They're broken. But there's a beautiful Gemara, guys, okay, which, actually, I have to quote it, because it's really beautiful imagery. Okay, there's a Gemara that says you should be careful with a Talmud Chacham Sheshachach Talmudo. Okay, what's that to be? What will be the case before I get to the imagery used? It happens, you know, people get older. Okay, something's very frustrating, right? Maybe you had that some of your grandparents, right? They're not as sharp as they used to be. So maybe they forgot their learning or they just can't articulate it. So the Gemara says, why? Luchot v'shivri luchot munachim ba'aron. That if you look at the aron, what did you see there? Both the full luchot and... So there's something very poignant about the imagery, right? The Talmud Chacham Sheshachach Talmudo is, as it were, shivrei luchot. But there's something very powerful about shivrei luchot also. So that's a great gemara. So the shivrei luchot were also in the aron together with the luchot. Yeah.
A lot of repertoire there. But what was I going to say? Oh, no. I like what the Nitziv is doing, but I just don't see how he's reading both Rashi or the Gemara, because Rashi...
Oh, so just one thing, guys. I'm sorry. This Nitziv that I brought in doesn't directly impact necessarily, or he doesn't tell us how he relates to that Chagiga Gemara. I only brought it in to give you a different take on the Bavli Yushalmi and what the darkness is. That's why I brought it in. It would be interesting to see how he read it into Chagiga.
I don't see how he reads it into Rashi's reading. Rashi bringing in the Gemara's header.
No, he doesn't. He disagrees with Rashi.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sorry if I didn't clarify that, guys.
Okay.
If you're reading Sanhedrin and it says the Bavli is about darkness and Rashi and the Nitziv are sitting here, what does Rashi say? It's dark because it's really difficult to understand. Meaning it might be a negative. Right? What did the Nitziv say? No, it's not dark. It's what gets us through the dark. That's what it is. That's the darkness of the Bavli.
We didn't say Lula here is Rashi.
But don't forget, remember the Sfasemis didn't feel that need either?
Maybe he's on
the Sfasemis team. Yeah.
So, like, I know like in Chumash, you were talking about, like Adam Rishon was like maybe it was meant to happen, maybe it wasn't. So,
that's a very good question. It's according to Nitziv. Wait, if we didn't mess up, we wouldn't get this great Torah? That's a good question. I don't know what Nitziv would say. That's a very good question. Yeah. I'm sorry?
That's like half the stories
in. Half the stories not going to lead to something better?
Gracious. I mean,
no, I agree. The chet of the Rishon, for sure, I'm with Joey in this. Just what other chatam do you think of like that? Where the chet leads to something better?
Yosef.
Oh, that's not it. That's
Sinai.
Okay, that's not bad. What was your Hasina example?
Well, I'm saying
the chet ego.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm saying if they had sold Yosef, there would have been no.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
David Bender, you could make this could be your safer. Okay, you get like the advantages of sinning. It could be ready. Everyone's gonna buy just based on the title. You're good to go. Ready. It's a great thesis. It's true. It might not play so well in the Haredi world. But we'll see. Yeah. I'm sorry. Say again. Oh, so one thing, guys. So this is a much larger topic, but I'll just raise it very briefly. Okay. The Nitziv is okay with the fact that, and this definitely won't play well in the Haredi world, but the Nitziv is okay with the fact that maybe the nature of Talmud Torah during Beit Rishon was not exactly like it was in Beit Sheni, which I think does fit Tanakh a little bit better. Meaning, do we conceive, let's say, of like David and Yonatan sitting around saying, what's Pshat the Minchas Chinuch? Right? So I think, again, it's hard, a little bit hard to read Tanakh and think about it going that way, but if the Nitziv is right, what might have happened? That maybe that development was more after they went back into, where should they back? After they went into Galut, right? That during Beit Rishon, halachic thinking was a little bit more, I don't know, simplistic, but simple or straightforward. And when they went into Galut, maybe that's when halachic thinking has this explosion of creativity. So I admit, guys, most rabbis don't like the idea that the nature of Torah could have changed over time and Torah learning. But the Nitziv was open to that idea. The Nitziv, Rav Kook, and Rav Tzadok are all open to that idea. That maybe during Beit Rishon it was a different process than Beit Sheni. So that would fit this, right?
And even then, like, times seems a little bit like the rabbis have this whole power with all the way back there, so they don't even like utilize the
book. Okay, so that's interesting. Meaning, I realize the two Nitzivs I just quote are a little bit in tension with each other. Because I'm claiming simultaneously that the second luchot is when we got this creative power, but it was only really fully manifest in after the gullet from the first Beit Midrash. So I think that can be worked out. So Ellie's right. What's one of the any Rav who thinks that, what's one of the things they're thinking? Beit Rishon still had Nevuah. So maybe Nevuah leads to a more straightforward approach to how to work out. It's more intuitive, right? It's more ad hoc right? You don't have to have this worked out system to the same degree. So I think you're onto something. It's not an accident that Bai Rishon has Nevuah and Bai Sheni doesn't have Nevuah. Yeah, Joey.
I think I saw a piece by Hanukkah that basically that Hanukkah introduced like Machloket.
Oh, you did it in Rav Huner.
Yeah.
It sounds like Rav Huner, yes. Okay, so I admit it's true. You guys all did it? How does everybody know Rav Huner? What a yeshiva. This is a great yeshiva. Okay, so I would just say. Yeah. What?
You did well.
Okay, yeah, that's it. I could retire happy. Okay, so if you think about it historically, you guys are right. You could kind of put the date at different points. So I admit, in response to Jacob's question, I placed it more like the first Galut in Bai Sheni. I admit Hanukkah would place it a little bit later. But it still works, because, guys, remember what Hanukkah is? It's about 160-something BCE. So that's, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. Actually, it's not exactly the middle, but a good 230 years before Churban Bai Sheni. So it could be in that Rav Huner piece, Hanukkah is where the explosion of Tarshu Bal Peh. But again, we could quibble with that, but I think the point is, okay, so you're right, Joey, but I think the common denominator would be that somehow there was a key moment. Meaning, again, what's even Rav Huner there, what's he basically agreeing with? That Bai Rishon didn't have the same kind of halachic debate that Bai Sheni did. So we could then debate, does it start immediately with Bai Sheni? Does it start in the Hanukkah story? But I think for our purpose, I'm not saying it's not interesting, but the basic idea is still there. That the explosion of machlok and halakhic creativity is a later event in Jewish history. Okay, Noah?
A few things. I think Rich Sachs also talked about that. It was after by Rishon.
Just curious, which book?
Letter in the Scroll.
Okay. I'm always impressed when someone can remember which Rich Sachs book something is in, because they're all merged in my head. It's really terrible. Okay. Okay, yeah.
I don't think you need Nevuah in order to solve that problem. Like you could say we were just in a Jewish society, we didn't have...
Okay, that's fair. That's fair enough. I think Nevuah could help. You're right. You could put Nevuah aside and still work it out.
Yeah. Also, does he draw out the comparison between Luke, Rishon, and Cheney to the Talmud Yerushalmi is more Kadosh than...
Yeah, correct. He said the Yerushalmi is more Kadosh and the Bavli is more Mechubah. The same split. Yeah. Well, that was, who asked that? Somebody, Joey asked me, right? Is it an example of a sin being beneficial?
No, not asking about that.
So yeah.
Doesn't that directly conflict with our whole idea of, like, the closer the Rebbeim are to Moshe and Sinai, the actually more pure the Torah is, and therefore, we can't possibly...
Okay, so, I have good news for you, David Edwards. It is true that Yerida and Hador is a strong theme in our tradition, but it's not the only theme. Okay? If you want, Menachem Kellner has a whole book about the decline of the generations where he points out the sources in the other direction. Okay? You can take a look. Yeah?
Two things. First of all, I think the Rambam would also call it the camp. It was, at the end of the day, a good thing that we had St. Gomez because it goes away from the idea of Korbanot and more towards different types of Avodah Zarah.
Do you have a specific quote of Rambam?
Does he not see
Korbanot? Look, it's so interesting. Because the Rambam said Korbanot is a concession to the ancient Near East, people make all kinds of assumptions about the Rambam based on that. So I'm not saying you're wrong, just you have to be careful to make a jump. I'm not sure the Rambam ever said that. I'm pretty sure he did not say that, in fact. That, well, now it's good to be able to go, look, so we can finally stop bringing these carbon. I don't think he ever said that.
Where do you get the idea that it's a positive thing to have more, halachic, machloket, and things like that? When we imagine, Mashiach coming, we say, they will have something.
Okay, so the truth is that David Venter does have a fair point. Yeah. I think all of us kind of are drawn to the second model. But David's right. In theory, the Netziv could say we move to the second model. But guess what? The first model is actually the ideal, right? It's not inconceivable, right? I admit, it's not where my gut goes, but there's no reason why someone can't take that position. So David, you're onto something, right? I agree. Even if we have this development, one could then ask, let's read very carefully, is this Achron assuming that the second model is better? Or are they not assuming that? So those of you who read the Rav Huner does talk about all the positives of the second model. It sounds like it's an improvement, right? But you could say that it's just a way of dealing with the galut. It doesn't make it an improvement necessarily.
What does the Netziv think about the
climate
generation?
Okay, I admit even though I've read a lot of Netziv, I do not have a specific source coming to mind, so I don't know. I don't know the answer offhand. Okay? Yeah, no.
So how would this idea of the second loophole was the thing that that created Mahloket deal with the Gemara. Maybe it's a Medrash that says like after Moshe died, or right before Moshe died, when he asked Yehoshua, like, did I tell you everything you had me last question? And he said no. And the Gemara says, oh, then 300 Sveko were born and he lost 500 Lepa. How do we deal with
that? Okay, so the truth is, I don't want to get into that specific story right now, but I will just say one thing because I want to move on to Rav Kook. Those who find this discussion interesting, so I very much recommend, the Holy Shiva was a debt of gratitude to A.B. Hirsch, because Meish Kapel from Efrat wrote a very interesting book called Meta Halacha, which unfortunately is out of print, it's impossible to find, and for some strange reason, A.B. Hirsch owns a copy. Okay, so if you, maybe you can ask him, he's a nice guy, maybe he won't lend it to you. Meta Halacha is a lot about this, like what, how did all, how much did you read, A.B.?
I read it three times.
Okay, there you go. So A.B. can testify, there is a similar theory there about how Halacha changes over time. Okay, so take a look, guys. Take a look. I'll just give you one thing, guys. Meish is also a mathematician. So he does use mathematical models. I'm just give you a brief warning and advice. If you don't like math, just skip the mathematical models. You'll get the book anyway. You don't really need them. Okay? Abe, did you try to understand all the mathematical models?
Yeah, right.
Are you a math guy?
Yeah, I'm not a math guy, but I appreciate it. It was very helpful.
Okay, there you go. All right, guys. We now move on to the second measure. We had a great time. We didn't get to Rav Kook yet. Mm-hmm. Let us go to Rav Kook. Now, Rav Kook, in two different passages, I was very fortunate because I discovered that there's a second passage. Rav Kook addressed, have to thank JJ, because I'm learning Orat HaKodesh with JJ, flipping through volume, the first volume, I found this. Okay, so let's look at two Rav Kook passages. Okay, Rav Kook is going to have a different shot altogether. Till now, how did everybody take Talmud with Talmud in that Gemara in Chagiga? Yushalmi Bavli, in one way or another, right? Yushalmi Bavli. Let's look at two passages of Rav Kook. Let's write Orot Yisrael V'Tchiyato. This is a section of Rav Kook's Sefer called Orot. Says Rav Kook, those of you might have heard this from me before, but it just gets better and better. L'famim margish ha'adam. Sometimes a person feels, she'ezeh chelek min ha'Torah v'chachma, there's a certain aspect of Torah, nidrashlo, which he needs, l'fi tchunato. What's his tchuna? Anyone know that word? Tchuna is your characteristics, your traits, according to his characteristics. V'tiku nishmato, and this is what? V'chol mahuto, and all of his essence. Excellent Hebrew, guys. And therefore, ukshunotem imiktzo l'dvavar acher. Now, in modern Hebrew, miktzoa is like a subject or a profession. Okay, I'm sorry? Excellent. Okay, so now, what's ukshunotem imiktzo? If he leaves, he inclines away from his subject, l'derech acher, margishu itzavon. What does he feel? Sadness. V'shivron pnimi b'kirbo. And an internal break. V'zeu omek haraz. This is the deep secret. Shal yotzeu l'ba ein shalom. Kiven shiotzeu mitalmud l'talmud ein shalom. Now, guys, that's what you should give a reading with Kook, because if they don't help you with the footnotes, you don't realize how often he's working off a pasuk or for a gemara. Okay, unfortunately, a lot of this Sefer Rav Kook did not provide extensive footnotes. But here, notice what happened, guys. How is Rav Kook, first of all, let's see what Rav Kook's saying, and how is he reading the Gemara? So what's Rav Kook saying, guys? Yeah?
Certain people kind of connect more to certain Torahs. And it's
excellent.
What their initial needs.
Totally, exactly, guys. This is one of the reasons I love Rav Kook. Okay, and some yeshiva approach would be, this is the model of what it means to be a yeshiva guy, right? Learn Gemara 3 Stamer Day, or learn Gemara 2 Stamer Day and something else one Seder. Rav Kook is very into finding your own approach. Now, it doesn't mean Rav Kook thinks learning should be a free-for-all, but he does think a person should ask himself, which aspect of Torah really grabs me? And it's a mistake to not listen to that inner voice. So I like Rav Kook very much in the sense that you might think, you know, religion is very authoritarian, it's all coming from the outside. For Rav Kook, no. If you have an inner voice that's saying, I love, you know, Mashaba, or I love Tanakh, or I love Gemara B'Iyun, listen to your voice. Right, but now, that's number one. But number two, let's go back to the Gemara in Chagiga. What's Yitzia Mitalmud L'Talmud for Rav Kook? Not Bavli Yushalmi. It just means from one area of learning to another. Right, you're drawn to one area of learning, but if you feel a need to abandon it, you end up in a place of Shalom. So I think it's fascinating. Rav Kook here, again, now we get to Rav Kook's educational philosophy, he's in a totally different shot than Rashi Tosfos. Rashi Tosfos is about Bavli versus Yerushalmi. It's a more objective answer for every single person. Rav Kook says, no, it's about me. Right? I will lack shalom if I abandon where I'm drawn to and go to something else. Yeah?
Does Rav Kook have no sense of the thing that's easiest and most appealing to you is actually not what you should do, maybe push yourself?
Okay, that's a great question. So I think Charlie's right. I'd like to take Rav Kook in a very specific direction, that this should be from a real deep connection and not because it's the path of least resistance. And I think for Rav Kook, he's not the one with the path of least resistance. He's saying that this your soul yearns for. Like, that's what makes you happy. That's what you feel fulfilled. That's what you find meaningful. Right? That which doesn't mean, by any stretch of the imagination, that it's necessarily easier for you. I think a lot of you in this room, if I asked you what's your favorite aspect of Torah, you wouldn't necessarily pick the thing that's easiest for you. Right? A lot of you might pick something you actually find harder than something else. I'll even give you an example. Okay, let's try, I'll pick JG for a second. I have no idea if this is true. JJ, would you say Rav Kook's up there in your top three?
Probably like one or two.
Okay, there you go. So let's say JJ like loves reading Rav Kook. I do not think JJ would say to us, guess what? I find Rav Kook easier than Sefer Shmot. I find that highly doubtful that he would say that. Okay, but he still might find it. That's where his soul's drawn. So Charlie, I think you're onto something. Okay, I don't think it's about the path of least resistance here. Yeah, David.
I'm wondering, so Rashi seems to think that the goal of learning is to get the law.
Well, at least this, guys, I'll be careful. I wouldn't make an entire thesis of Rashi based on one source.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rashi thinks, what's Chagiga Dafyut about? About the tranquility of a halakha conclusion. That's what Chagiga Dafyut's about. So Rav Kook does not think it's only about that.
So, does Rav Kook think it's just about Vegas Hashem or just about reaching your soul?
Maybe. It's too interesting, guys. I wonder if Rav Kook would read the first. Do you think Rav Kook would read the first two sources that we also have? First two examples?
No,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure Rav Kook would read the first two.
Does he not feel like you also, besides that, more self-serving model, honestly?
No, but again, but that's the key thing, guys. I think Rav Kook would deny that it's self-serving. I think Rav Kook would say, you are trying to be connected to divinity. You are trying to have a transcendent learning experience, and that's a good thing. It's not a selfish thing.
Do you think that this should be done after a certain point?
Look, I agree, guys. Like, there was a second, AB. Let me clarify one thing, guys. Even though I'm very much drawn to this Rav Kook, obviously it's within limitation. Like, if JJ said to me, Rabbi, I decide my new plan is I only learn Rav Kook all day. I never open Tanakh, I never open Gemara, I never open Halacha. I just do Rav Kook from 8 in the morning to 11 at night. I would tell him, I don't think Rav Kook would like that. Okay, I would tell him that. So I think there are limits. But I think within limits, Rav Kook is saying, part of your schedule should be what you feel most drawn to. That whatever the, don't just ask what the yeshiva schedule is, ask what am I drawn to. That should be part of your learning day. Yeah, Amy?
You're trying to say I can't answer for Rav Kook, but I'm asking, there's some sense of value, for example, like, obviously we have, like, Mashav is important and all, but if somebody doesn't know basic Tanakh, it's really doubtful that they should.
Okay, look, I would agree also, okay? First of all, I do feel a funny speaking for Rav Kook, but I'll put two caveats on that. One caveat is, it doesn't mean you do this all day.
Yeah. No.
And the other caveat is, I still think it's true that things that are more basic than something else. Like, as you guys know, I do like to make fun of the writer guys sometimes that they might know Kabbalistic things. Or not. So I assume they know the story or don't know the story?
They don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So here's a great story, guys. So I am learning Chavrut with a writer guy 1 year. Okay. And the verb ganaz comes up. Gimel nun zayin. So I asked the fellow, do you know the word ganaz? And he says no. So I try to show that the guys really know it if they just make the right association. So first I say, I'll try halacha. So I say, have you ever heard about putting an old book in Gniza? Right? The guy says no. Okay, so then I say, okay, maybe the guy knows Jewish history. So I say to him, have you ever heard of the Cairo Gniza? And he says no. Okay, so now I'm about to give up, but then like the light goes on in my head. And I say, have you ever heard of the Or HaGanuz? And the guy goes, sure, it's the primordial light from creation that's saved for the righteous in the world to come. Okay, so I said, we've got a problem here. Okay, so I agree that there are certain things that are more basic. Yeah.
Again, to preface this, I'm very much not speaking here, but I think very much, like, even within this, like, the piece we looked at, he's only quoting one of the three opinions of the Gemara. He's not rejecting the other two, and I think within that he would argue it's important. The other two are, I think, very clearly talking more so about like halakha.
You're saying that might be the nice balance in terms of AB's point, that the first two sources indicate it's good to know basic halakha before you ask like what is your soul drawn to, and then the third line is about it's a nice try, Don. Yeah, nice try. Yeah.
Rav Kook gets a little hard to understand in the context of Dovah, that he says in a lot of different places that like he has like this paycheck for like the inner workings of Torah.
Okay, well, why is that hard to understand?
Because he learned he sees Lot the Ian every single day.
Who told you that?
That's like a lot of that.
Okay, I. You'd accord, you'd assess that?
Yeah.
confessing mercy is wrong.
And Yuda takes it as a fact?
I mean, everyone.
I have a lot of doubts about it. I'm not sure it's humanly possible to learn 60 daf beyin every day.
Maybe it doesn't mean like fully like okay. Every single like Rishon. Maybe it means like
he has been through.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, like Rav Kook obviously.
Wait, Eli, I hear your question, but let me ask you a question. Okay, Rav Kook wrote a tremendous amount. Okay, what did he write a tremendous amount of?
Machshava.
Yeah. So even if we accept the account that he learned 60 blot beyin a day, he clearly found time to do other things also. Correct. I'm not suggesting Rav Kook wasn't a massive Talmud Chacham in Gemara, but if I ask you where was his literary expression, his literary expression was predominantly in the world of Machshava. So I think that does fit where his soul was yearning. Okay? All right, guys. Now, I'm going to do one more source because it's not really fair to keep you past 12 and you do have to get home at some point. But if you want, the last source from Ohr HaTorah follows what we just did. This idea that one should follow one's soul. So if you're curious how it plays out, read that, guys. And if you don't understand it, I'm happy to learn with anybody whenever they want. Okay? It's just such a good source. But we're going to go to Rav Kook's last plot in Gemara. Now, Shmona, just realize the terminology, guys. For many years, Rav Kook was kind of packaged by other people. He famously left 8 notebooks full of great material, and then his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and his student, the Nazir, would compile based on those notebooks. But then they were very excited when a few years ago, or maybe 20 years ago, they finally released the original. So you ever see the term Shmona Kvatzim? There was the original 8 notebooks of Rav Kook, from which they drew all this other material. Okay, so this is a period piece that I found in Ohr HaKodesh, but then I did a... By the way, it's all on Wikitext. The internet's amazing. Okay, so then I found it in Shmona Kvatzim through Wikitext. Okay, you guys know about that? That there's, you know what Wikitext is? Okay, go look it up. Okay? What? Okay. Guys, stop. Oh, Eli Jarisho, you're such a great guy. You're just too much fun to make fun of. Well, Eli, stop following Yul Hasidic Twitter and go to Rav Kook on Wikitext. Use your time well, Eli Jarisho. Okay, so let's go. Stop checking what's on YUTOR every 5 seconds. Okay, here we go. Okay, here we go. Let's go to Shmona Kvatzim. Okay, says Rav Kook. Okay, Inui Gadol. What's Inui? There's great suffering. Yesh l'niknas mitoch harchava gdola shiunim torim. Someone who enters this wide expanse of investigation, memuzagim, which is mixed together, beregesh v'shira klalit tiferet. What's it mixed together with? So iyun sounds very intellectual, right? Pure speculation, investigation. But what do we have now? Regesh and shira, feelings and songs. There's an emotional component too. So let's say you're learning some great piece in Rav Tzadok, and you're just flying. And what happens? What causes the inui? El toch haktzuvot hahilchotiot. What do you enter? Something fixed and halachic. So this is also one of the amazing things about Rav Kook. Rav Kook loved halacha, but Rav Kook understood that sometimes halacha could be really frustrating. Okay, I'm not talking about practicing halacha right now. I'm talking about learning halacha. I think for some people in this room, what I love about Rav Kook is that he legitimates that feeling. Most Orthodox rabbis would not be willing to do that. Right, you're learning a great piece of Rav Tzadok, and then all of a sudden it's time for Mishnah Berurah. And what does your soul say? Oh my God, what happened? Like here I was flying in like the world of profound ideas and metaphysics, and where am I now? Which shoe do you put on first? Do you put your right shoe on first or your left shoe on first? So that could be a real difficulty. So, but what I love about Rav Kook is Rav Kook was open enough to admit the difficulty, right? So he says that could cause inui. Shehein shchorot korev. These halachot are black like orev, like a raven. Aval pi shezel yofyo vizuz kacho limsho bolam amalei mechashchim zomov disot mumot aval baal hanishama hamufueret badar kedusha who margish et anuto hanara. At kol chavlei ha-ma'asar. What does he feel like? What would be chavlei ha-ma'asar? Guys, chavalim. Oh, who went to Camp Stone? What's chavalim? Chavalim?
Ropes,
good. So, and what's ma'asar? From the word like matir asurim? Not forbidden, but to be bound. So what do you feel? You feel like the ropes of bondage. Chavlei ha-ma'asar. Be'eit. Now here comes the key phrase, guys. Once again, Rav Kook does it, assuming you'll know Shas, I guess. Be'eit yitzia mitalmud el talmud. Okay, now notice, here Rav Kook doesn't make it more broadly about what you love to what you don't love, because what you love might be halacha. Now, I want to be fair, guys. I always feel like I'm a little bit unfair here, because since my soul is also drawn after machshava. But there are people who really love practical halacha. That's what they love. Right? I'm sorry?
Ravadi.
Yeah, that's what Ravadi says. There you go. Ravadi's certainly a serious human being. He would say that makes him, that connects him. What? Yeah, I would, as I say, guys, he is the, in all of Chinuch in Israel, he is the ultimate team player. He's the guy who wins you the championship, Ravadi. Okay, so that's why he's going to be up with you guys at 4 in the morning, because he's the ultimate team player. Okay? Okay. Okay? So that's a good example. So there are people like that too, so I want to be fair. But I think Rav Kook very much understands, and maybe because that's who he was, is identifying a little bit with the other side of the coin. And he says you feel a little bit like you're constrained. But here it sounds like Talmud El Talmud is not just giving up your main thing, it's more specifically for Rav Kook, going from this great world of Machshava to the constraints of Halacha. But let's keep reading. What do you need? Good advice. Now, guys, Rav Kook's Hebrew is notoriously difficult. Here we go. Eich l'rapeid et hayitzua. Okay, guys, rapeid is like furniture, but here it's a cushion. How to cushion the yitzua is what you spread out. Shela tochnim ha-masiyim l'prateim ha-kashim b'rfidot rachot. Ah, what are you trying to cushion? What are tochnim masiyim? What's that a reference to again, guys? Well, something masi is something practical. So that's again a reference to halacha. So apparently there's a way to cushion it. And then what happens? Mleot yifa, I don't remember what yifa means because here it's with an ayin. Shel adinur ha-chayim. What are you able to do at that point? Adinut, you can make it somehow? Yeah, well, just be a little more literal, even though you're right. Something, adin is something like gentle or refined. You could give it the refinement of life. The hadara kodesh and the beauty of sanctity. So this is a crucial point. Now, I wish Rav Kook had spelled it a little more. What's Rav Kook saying? Even for the person whose soul is drawn after machshava, there are methods to make halacha more meaningful, to make it significant for you, to make it work for you. So Rav Kook, let me clarify this point because I don't overstate it. Rav Kook here is not saying, I hate learning halacha, we should all give it up. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that there's ways to make it work. But he is saying he appreciates the soul who struggles with that. Right? That there is a certain difficulty sometimes for someone who finds the grandeur of machshava to find that grandeur in the details of learning halacha. So let me just sum up here, but I think we have two very beautiful points in Rav Kook. Okay, I think the whole thing is interesting. The whole Gemara Chagiga is fascinating. And again, I really just discovered it this year, so it's good even to discover new things at 53. Okay, that's because I don't go over Shas 60 times a day at Gemara Chagiga. I would have known that Gemara Chagiga. Okay, but...
What? The wig made you...
Okay.
Double
wig. Okay. I certainly do not do 60 times a day. I don't do it like one day a day. Okay, but... In any case, but I think we have two important principles here. And again, I think they're not obvious. I hope you guys appreciate. Like, I once wrote a whole blog on the Times of Israel about how certain things I needed some rabbi to say, and Rav Kook was always the rabbi who said them. Like, when I needed someone to say it, Rav Kook was my go-to man, and like 9 out of 10 times he said it. So here, if you look at it, I think we have two very powerful ideas. One, again, you could have a religious perspective, which is what your soul's drawn to is irrelevant. Like, and some of you guys even phrased it this way. Like, maybe you're being self-centered. Like, stop thinking about yourself. Just ask what the Torah demands of you. But apparently Rav Kook thinks that where your soul's drawn really does matter. So I think that's an important point. If you ever feel funny about that, you can rely on Rav Kook. Does think you should find where your soul's drawn and connect. And the second thing is, if you find aspects of Torah frustrating, that doesn't mean you're some evil person who's destined for Gehenna. Okay, Rav Kook is very open about the fact that someone who loves Machshava here might sometimes find halachic learning much less inspiring and much less difficult. Now again, Rav Kook is not rejecting it in the slightest. But I think he does some degree validate that experience. And for me, in my mind, it's a very important thing. Like, we should be open to validate. I love Judaism, but we should be open to validating the difficulties. I think if we're not open to validating the difficulties, we're not really being fair to our students. Yeah?
So is the cook sort of drawing down what he feels connected to?
Look, to be fair, I want to be fair. He never says that this piece is about himself.
Okay.
I think, if I recall, I think there's some place where he does say this, a similar idea about himself. In this piece, he just says it about a person out there.
So but interpretation on Rabbi Israel is incorrect. that Talmud to Talmud isn't just abandoning what you're drawn to, and rather it's going from this.
Well, look, I'll say it this way. In Or Yisrael, well, why does it be incorrect? Couldn't Rav Kook like have different emphases in different places? Like in Or Yisrael, he said, what did he say? Leaving the Mitzvah that you love.
Yeah.
But in theory, that could go in any direction, right?
Right.
But here it's much more specific. But
he wants to stay consistent on Talmud to Talmud, meaning the same thing.
I think, you know, you're raising an interesting point, but I think in the world of Rav Kook's Machshava, in theory, he could choose to take the Gemara in a different way at a certain point in time. Right? So I'm not sure you have to reconcile the two. Yeah. Yeah.
You said that he mentioned that there are ways to make halacha more inspiring. Question number one is how? And also number two, is it some, I remember you talked, it might be this source, but you talked to us over Kaizman actually.
Yeah.
That like by actually learning the thing that you're trying to draw after, it enhances that.
Okay, very good. So I will say one thing, I think it's a very beautiful, maybe we'll close at this point. I don't feel like 11:59 I should start a new topic. It's not really fair. Even though Eli asked a very good question. But I'll just say, in the Rod HaTorah piece, he says something very powerful. He says that if you follow where your soul's drawn, you'll even have a better relationship with the thing that your soul's not drawn to. Which I think, I forgot I taught it over the summer. That's right. So that's the last piece. I'll just give you an example, guys. I think it's a very good example. Like, I imagine most people in this room are probably more humanities guys or more math science guys, right? So let's say you're a math science guy and we force you to read poetry all day. So you're naturally, who's a real math science guy here? Oh, there we go. Okay, so probably you're going to be pretty miserable, right? You are yearning for a little physics, you know, a little calculus, right? A little organic chemistry. Okay, that's the world. And all of a sudden, you're like, you're reading William Wordsworth, right? You just can't take it. Okay, so that makes sense. You'll hate it. But what if we say to you, good news. Here's your college curriculum. 5 of your 6 courses are what you absolutely love. Okay, you're going to take all 1 semester, be the hardest semester in human history. Physics, advanced calculus, organic chemistry. Okay, it's just going to be great. And the 6th course is going to be romantic poetry. Yeah, right? So isn't it possible at that point that you'll actually come to appreciate it? Like, if it's forced down your throat all day, what am I doing? This is not what I love. This is not what I'm drawn to. But if it's kind of a sidelight to what you're doing, you could learn, oh, now I see why someone finds this meaningful. Right? And the vice versa also. I think the person who loves humanities, if they're forced to study physics all day, it's going to be a disaster. Okay? But if it's part of their lives, then you could appreciate it. So Rav Kook, if he does not agree. Okay? So you look, guys, Rav Kook does say that here. Rav Kook says, I'll just give you one thing he says, guys. It's a very similar example. There he uses Agadah and Halakha. He says, what if your soul's drawn to Agadah and you learn Halakha all day? So you're going to be pretty miserable. But what happens if we let you learn a lot of Agadah? So then you'll realize it's not that there's something terrible about Halakha. It's just that your soul was yearning for Agadah. But once that part of your soul is filled, you can learn to also appreciate. So that, I think, is actually great advice. That he says in the last piece here. All right, guys, it was a pleasure learning with you. And enjoy the Super Bowl.
Thank you.